Would you like to join me in the Lord's Prayer? I don't want to allow set up what he had to say, but I will do a little here. You know, I don't know just exactly how much, but we will try to get into it. My name is Clark Rogers. God. I used to drink a lot. It's been a beautiful roundup up till now. And there's been a lot of joy and laughter here tonight, and that's great. Laughter is one of the greatest medicines that we found, and I'm so glad I found a lot of it. Because sometimes when I get serious, I get real serious, and I'm honest with you, and I'm serious with you now. Sometimes I cry. My daddy told me, though, a long time ago that it's all right. It's all right, boy. The more you cry, the less you pee. My name is Jim Hawkins, and I'm an alcoholic. And it hasn't been necessary for me to take a drink of alcohol since December the 8th, 1955. And for that, I'm so grateful. And my old buddy over there from Memphis has got 41 years. And he says he ain't going to let me catch him. We've been friends for a long time. He used to be in Birmingham. But it's so good to be here. It's always good to be in Mount Eagle. This is my 65th Mount Eagle roundup for Mickey and I. I believe Mickey's got 64. She came the second one. She came the third one, and I came to the second one. It's been a great pleasure to be involved in this roundup. This is one of the best ones that I've ever been to. This was patterned after one up in Virginia where Mickey and I was at a couple of weeks ago, called Blackstone, and I know a lot of you have heard of it. This is one of the finest roundups in the country, AA roundups. And I'm going to say something here that I would ordinarily say if I was still on the board. But I'm not on the board anymore because I quit. But I'm going to say something. Bring someone with you next time. Bring someone with you next time. For some reason, unknown to all of this board here that works their tails off, because as I said, I've been on it, we need a few more people to break even on this thing. And that's just laying it out there, and I ain't going to make a dime out of that. They ain't going to let me come any cheaper than they do anybody else because I said that. But it's a great roundup, and let's keep it alive. And let's keep it going. There's a great thing going here. Some of us have had the opportunity of being around a long time. Some of us may not be around a whole lot longer. And that's one of the things that bothers me. Don't bother me. When I came into AA, Mickey told you last night, it was last night. This morning. Seems like it was last night. that we went to this doctor in Bessemer. We lived out in Hueytown, which is just a little suburb out from Bessemer. And this doctor, when I told him what kind of behavior that I had been doing, displaying, and how I'd been drinking some of the things. And I think I told that man the truth. And I was about 31 years old. And he said, there's not anything I can do for you, young man. And I said, you can't? He said, no, sir, there's not anything I can do. But he says, I know of and I've heard of, as Mickey said last night or this morning, there's a group of people here in this town that meet two or three times a week. And they share things with one another about their past and hopefully about their future. And if you'd like, I happen to know a couple of them. And if you would like, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to call those one or both of those men and let them contact you. Well, I said, okay, that's fine. And we went back home, and that was all there was to it. And Mickey said, what did he do? I said, he just made a phone call. Well, what's that going to do about it? You know, didn't he do anything to you? No, I said, not yet. Not yet. Well, that night, Raleigh Ruby, one of my sponsors, and A.J. Bailey, my only sponsor that's alive today, and A.J. is almost a 99% invalid. But those are the only two that are left. They became my sponsors. They stayed with us until meeting time that night and talked to Mickey and I, and they took me to my first meeting. And I had no idea what I was getting into. I had no idea. I always thought I was too young to be an alcoholic. I knew I was a drunk. I would admit that to myself. I wouldn't to anyone else. But they took me to a meeting, and I told Mickey about it when I got home. We sat up, and we read some literature, and we talked about it. Bessemer was one of the very few meetings in the area that we lived. I think there's one in Five Points, Birmingham, and one in Eastlake. There was one in downtown in the basement. And that was about the end of it, and the one in Bessemer. Bessemer, I told you about Raleigh and A.J. becoming my sponsors. Well, two others volunteered to be my sponsors, George and Peggy. Now, Peggy was the wife of Raleigh. They had gotten sober over at Five Points. That was four members of that group that was my sponsors. There was eight members in the group. I can assure you I needed all of them. I needed all of them. Raleigh and A.J. always were my main sponsors. George died shortly after I got sober, maybe a year later. And then, I don't know, two or three years later, Peggy died. Peggy Ruby was undoubtedly the most obnoxious and the meanest damn woman that I ever met. Ugly, too. Ugly. She was so ugly. It would turn your stomach. But Peggy talked to me. She talked to me like a... I'm not going to mention it here what she talked to me like. But she talked to me real nasty, real nasty. And I resented her. But you know something, Peggy, she would always talk to me like that. And then she'd tell me how much she loved me. After about 3 years, Peggy became very ill, very ill. And she died. And she died. And I was asked, she told Raleigh that she wanted Jim to be involved in her funeral when she died. She knew she was going to die. And when I looked at Peggy that morning, and I think I was one of the pallbearers, she wasn't ugly anymore. She was beautiful. See, Peggy was an alcoholic, an AA member, that loved the people that she worked with enough to tell them the truth. She told me I was the most obnoxious. She used to call me a flat-nosed SOB. Now, that's not son of the beach. It's a more prevalent one. But Peggy was a jewel. That's the kind of people that I had working with me when I came into AA. They were the ones that were founders of this group of eight members. And I stayed a member of that group for approximately 20 years and had a beautiful time. I had a beautiful time. But it came to pass that we must move away, and we did, and we moved up. We moved into Birmingham for 6 years and then up to Lake Highland where we live today. But one of the things that is, if I don't tell you anything, I'm going to tell you about my drinking in a minute. I'm going to take all the time I want. Y'all did. I sat over there with a certain part of my body chewing on that cushion and watched that raffle, and Mickey was winning everything. I don't know whether she had my tickets or hers. But I'm going to talk about how I got into AA and how I got sober. But in 1955 is when I went to AA, and there was a lot of things happened to me. Even during sobriety. I was unable to comprehend a lot of things for a long time when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a hard one to work with, I'm sure of that. But I had the greatest sponsors on earth, the greatest that there was. I was working for a beverage concern. I was working for the world's largest liquor importer when I came into AA. I was in the beverage division. And I had been working for them some time. I'd worked for them up in Evansville, Indiana. Mickey and I had moved from Chicago down there, and then we'd moved from Evansville to Birmingham, or to Bessemer. Not too many years after, shortly before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I decided to resign from this company. I was offered a job. You know, it always builds us up, especially with our background in drinking and being fired as many times as I was. Schlitz Brewing Company offered me a job. Well, see, I'd been working for this liquor outfit, only I wasn't handling liquor, I was handling chasers. So Schlitz Brewing Company offered me a job, and I went to work selling beer. They didn't care how much you drank while you were working. That was probably one of the reasons I took the job. As long as you completed your route, and as long as you did your route, and as long as you showed up for work in the morning, you could drink all the beer you wanted, as long as it was Schlitz. Well, that was the end for me. Sometime in November of the year that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I checked into a Flophouse Hotel in Birmingham. Flophouse Hotel. This was on one of these drunks like Mickey was talking about this morning. I'd been gone, I don't know how long I'd been gone when I did this. Possibly not very long. But during my period of time in this hospital, in this hotel, any of you that are familiar with the Birmingham area, it wasn't a Tutwiler. I'm not going to tell you its name because it's still there, and I don't know how it stood, but it's still there. But anyway, I checked into this hotel. This was in November. This was in November of the year that I came into, a year of 1955. And I don't even know how long I stayed there, but during the period of time that I was in this hotel room, there was a lot of things crossed my mind. I thought about how I was raised. I thought about my relationship with my father. My father was one of the greatest men that ever lived. His name was also Jim Hawkins. He was a merchant. He was a merchant in North Alabama. And he was a great guy. I didn't have any brothers. I had one sister. My daddy never took another drink of alcohol after I started drinking, I don't think. I mean, after I got married, after Mickey and I married. He never took another drink. He never did drink much. I think later on, my dad became very ill later on, and he would occasionally drink some of my beer. My dad got to a point to where he didn't know a lot of things that were going on, and he became almost an invalid. And I was still drinking. I was still drinking. But in this hotel room, I thought about all of the things that my parents and my people had tried to do for me, and all of the people in AA had tried to do for me. I'd been very angry at some of them because they told me that I needed to be sober. I needed to take. I loved my wife. I loved my wife, and I loved our two children. I loved my wife more than anyone else on earth, even then. You see, Mickey and I, we dated about 1 year. She told you about that before we were married. And then shortly after we married, probably about 9.5 months, she gave me our first child. And about 1 year later, she gave me our other child. And I'm going to talk about them a few minutes before I get through tonight. But we could have had a beautiful life. I know this. But there was something wrong with me that I didn't understand. There was something wrong with me that my wife didn't understand. God knows tonight. And God knew then I didn't want to be like I was. I desperately wanted to be like other people, the people that I knew, the other people that I knew. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I knew I was a drunk. But during the time that I was in this hotel, there was many things crossed my mind. Many, many things crossed my mind. I remember that I would call A.J. almost every day. And A.J. he lived about 15 miles south of Bessemer, and he'd drive all the way to Birmingham to see me. And after several days of this, I don't know how many, he finally told me, he says, "Jim, I can't come back anymore. I can't come back anymore. I'm going to lose my job coming after you." I'd say, "I'm ready." And he'd say, "Well, I'll come and get you." And before he'd get there, I'd be drunk again. And I'd send him back. I'd send him back. But I don't know, this hotel that I was in didn't have a restroom in each room. That gives you an idea of what kind it was, doesn't it? It had a restroom on each floor. It also had a telephone on each floor. On the morning of December the 8th, I walked down the hallway. Now, you see, I had already been to AA. See, 10 months prior to this, I'd gone to AA. And Mickey says, "I thought I got drunk a lot of times." She said, "I really didn't get drunk but about twice. And I think they lasted about 8 months apiece. 6 months apiece." But anyway, that morning, I had a feeling that there was something I wanted to do, something that I needed to do that I never had done before. And I came out of my room, and I walked down the hall of that flea bag hotel. And you know the kind I'm talking about. You know the kind with the stinks and the grime and the dirt. I walked down the hall of that hotel to the only restroom on that floor. And I walked in and closed the door, and you could see the cobwebs in the corners. I can see it just as plain tonight, almost 39 years later. I can see it just as plain tonight as how that old room looked. Some of the window panes were cracked. And one of the things I'll never forget, it had an old white octagon-shaped tile in the floor. You remember how that was? That was popular back in those days. And there were cracks in those tiles. And there were cracks in the corner of this floor. And in these cracks, there was human waste. Human waste. And I got on my knees in that filthy, crummy restroom. And I said the only thing that I knew to say that day in the condition that I was in. I said, God, teach me how to pray. I didn't know how to pray. I don't know how long. I don't know how long I stayed down there. But I do know that I talked to him just like I'm talking to you tonight, just like kind of man to man. And eventually I finally got up off of the floor to go back to the room. And when I got up off of the floor and started down the hallway back to that room, I knew with all of the strength and all of the knowledge that I'd ever had, that I didn't ever have to drink again if I didn't want to. I think if there's any such thing, and I know there is, I think if I ever had any such thing happen to me as a spiritual awakening, it happened to me that morning in December of 1955. And I haven't had a drink since that time. But now, one of the kind of guys that I was while I was working for this company, I remember one Friday afternoon, to give you a little example about what a valuable employee I was with this company. One Friday night, Jerry called a sales meeting. Our general manager's name was Jerry Cacciarti, and he was from Rochester, New York. This firm that we was working for was headquartered in New York, this liquor outfit. And during this sales meeting, now this was quite a while before I went to the hotel, because I'd already gone to Schlitz. But I want to briefly go through this part of my life to let you know what kind of an alcoholic I was. So during this sales meeting, just before the meeting was over, he said, beginning tomorrow morning, Jim Hawkins will be general sales manager of our company. I had really been selling merchandise. I know that. Because I was drunk most of the time, but I was selling merchandise. And that's what Jerry liked, was for you to sell merchandise. And he says, beginning tomorrow, he'll be the general manager, a general sales manager. Well, I never had been that before. I didn't really know what the duties would be, but I had been a route supervisor, and I had been assistant sales manager, but never a general sales. I liked that general sound of that. Really liked that. And so he says, and first thing tonight, before you guys go home, after the meeting was over, now he called me and he called a young man over there by the name of Brian. And he says, before you guys go home, I want you to get together and talk tonight. And he says, Jim, I want you to go to Tuscaloosa tomorrow with Brian and call on some of our customers down there. And he says, I want you to teach him how to sell. I said, you know how to do it. I said, I want you to teach that boy how to sell. And I said, I'll do her. So I got with Brian and I said, now we got to get together and plan this thing for tomorrow. So we went down the street to Joe's. Joe's was the neighborhood bar. Now this was about probably 8 o'clock at night, and about 6:30 to 7 o'clock the next morning, we were still down at Joe's planning our day. During the course of this evening, Brian had mentioned to me about his ranch. He had a farm or a ranch or something east of Birmingham, several thousand acres. I don't remember just exactly what he said. I never could figure out in my own mind where it was at. But he told me about this, and he said he's running some cattle, but he needed to buy some more cattle. And I said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll just go in business with you. I'll throw my available cash into the corporation, and we'll go buy a herd of cattle. I know where we can buy some out in Arkansas. Out in Arkansas is where me and Mickey was running that restaurant and bar that time when she was talking about gonna make me jealous. But anyway, I was going to take him to Arkansas, and we was going to buy these cattle. But so I told him, I said, but one of the things we're going to have to do right away, we're going to have to get out of here, because Jerry will be coming to work, and we got to be gone when he gets here. And he said, okay. So he got his truck out with all these mixers on the truck. We called on bars and restaurants and so forth. But I said, you go by and pick up your helper, because I'm gonna drive my car. I'm not gonna ride in the truck with you. I had a new car. I owed probably twice as much as it was worth, but I drove the car and I sent Brian and Charlie on to Tuscaloosa. Now, Charlie was a helper. We had helpers. We had lots of these trucks running, but we had each one of those trucks had a sales driver. They called them driver sales. And each one of them had helpers, 16, 17, 15, 16, 17-year-old youngsters that were out of school, and we was giving them a job during the summer. Now, Brian's helper's name was Charlie. This is important. Charlie, remember that now. Charlie was a black boy. Brian was a white boy. And Brian was the driver salesman, and Charlie was the helper. Okay, they started, and about 2-3 blocks away from the warehouse, I blew the horn, and Brian pulled over, and, what do you want? Ooh, we need a drink. So we took a drink and did a little more planning. He got back in the truck, I stayed in the car, drove a couple, 3 more blocks or a half a mile, I blew the horn, he stopped, we had another drink. About 11 o'clock, we was all the way to Bessemer, about 11 miles south of Birmingham. And I told Brian, I said, we're not going to make it today. We're never going to get there unless we make some kind of arrangements with this situation we're in here. I said, why don't we just send Charlie on to Tuscaloosa with the truck, and you and I will follow along behind. And he thought it was a good idea too, you know. But Charlie had twice as much sense as both of us. He said, but Mr. Hawkins, the helpers are not allowed to drive the trucks. Well, I thought that over a minute, and I looked at Brian and I looked at Charlie, and they were about the same size, about the same height and about the same weight and so forth. And Charlie said he didn't have no driver's license, and I was trying to figure out a way so I could help him. And I looked at them, and they looked like the same size. And I told Brian, I said, loan him your license. He said, why, sure. So he handed his license to Charlie. And it just happened to have white on there, you know, for race. Charlie took the truck with Brian's license, and he went on to Tuscaloosa, and we followed along. And during this period of time of going to Tuscaloosa, we did some more planning about the cattle we were going to buy. We got to Tuscaloosa sometime about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we haven't called on a customer. And Charlie was knee-walking drunk, the helper. He had found a jug of liquor in the truck that Brian had left in there, and he drank it, and he was drunk. I sent him back to Birmingham with that truckload of merchandise, and I told him to tell Jerry, the general manager of our company, that Brian and I had gone to Arkansas to buy a herd of cattle. Now, Jerry was a little jumping, squealing Italian, and I thought about, you know, during this next week, when I would get reasonably sober, I'd think about this guy jumping up and down and screaming and hollering about us going to Arkansas, and we'd sent Charlie back with his truck and him knee-walking drunk. You know, he didn't fire me. He didn't fire me. And there's one other little thing that happened on that, two other little things that happened on that trip. About 2 blocks from where we sent Charlie back, we saw an old long-legged boy standing out on the side of the road with his A&P suitcase, you know, paper bag, and he was thumbing. And I said, you know, you feeling mellow? And so I said, we'll give the old boy a ride. We pulled over to the side, and I said, would you like a ride? He said, yeah. I said, where are you going? Said, going to Mobile. I said, well, we're going to Memphis. We're headed for Arkansas. He said, right now, you're headed towards Mobile. I said, the hell I am. He says, you're on Highway 45 South. That goes right into Mobile. I says, well, load in. We'll just go by Mobile. There ain't nothing, you know, that'll get any more wild than a couple of drunks. Okay, we started towards Mobile, and about 4 or 5 miles down the road below Tuscaloosa, I was cruising along, and this old boy in the back seat, he reached over, tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, Mister, I said, yeah, said, if you don't mind, said, if you'll write down at the bottom of this little grade that we're going down, my sister lives down there. And he said, if you don't mind, I'd love to get off. I want to spend the night with her before I go on into Mobile. I said, he was an ungrateful son of a bitch. You know, I'd offered him a ride, and he didn't like the way I was driving, and I didn't care. But, I know he would be glad to know that he got out at a good time. Several miles from the time we let him out, we came off of a long hill somewhere down there around Mobile. I don't know where. Doing all that automobile. I had a brand new car, a yellow car, a long one. Drunks always buy long yellow cars, or red, especially during the period of drinking. And we come off of this long hill. I have no idea how much we were doing, probably all the car would do. And right at the bottom of that hill, there was a ditch and a bridge across that ditch. Of course, I didn't know all that till we got down there. But we came to just before. We were both asleep, sound asleep, doing about 80 miles an hour coming down that hill. And I woke up, I don't know whether Brian did or not. I was driving, and I woke up. Something told me, said, turn left. I don't know if it's Brian or if it was God as I understood him at that time. I didn't understand him too well. I know he didn't understand me. I turned the car to the left, and we skidded through that bridge. Made it through. We left some articles on the other end, like a right rear fender and quarter panel and a back bumper and all that stuff. We left all that on the other end of the bridge. But we went on through that bridge, and then we drove that car all over Arkansas and God knows where, with a fender missing and a bumper missing and a trunk lid missing. All of that right hand rear end of it was torn off. But, we'd still go. That is a little bit of my behavior. This is the better part of my behavior. That's right. But as a result of these things that happened to me in this hotel room, I called A.J. that day, and I said, A.J., this is Jim, and he says, yeah, I know, Jim. You're busy. You're ready, aren't you? Just like that. He says, yeah, I know, Jim. You're busy. You're ready. And I said, I sure am, A.J. Can you come and get me? This was on a Thursday. A.J. worked hourly work in a factory. And he was supposed to be on the job. He worked days. And this was in the middle of the week. I wish you could have heard his story. He was a nitroglycerin manufacturer. Drunk manufacturer of nitroglycerin for Hercules Powder Company. He said he'd hauled a million loads and never did know when he left or when he got there. That's right. That's the kind of guy that sponsored me. I said, AJ, don't drive your car up here. Mine's here. You take a bus into Birmingham and you can drive my car home if you will. And he did. He lived 14 miles south of Bessemer. And he came those 29 miles on an old rickety bus to pick me up, and he took me home. AJ took me home, and a lot of you know AJ. AJ took me home, and he put me to bed like an infant baby, and he tucked me in the bed. And he went to his AA meeting, and he saw Mickey down there. And I heard later that he said, well, I put the old boy to bed. He's pretty sick. Mickey said something like, I hope the S.O.B. dies. And I know she didn't mean that. But that's the kind of sponsorship I had out of A.J. And A.J. continued to sponsor me for many, many years. For many, many years. And one of the things that had stuck with me was some of the things that I was taught as a child. I told you that my father loved God. I didn't know anything about God, but my dad did, and he took me to church when I was a child. Some of the things they taught me as a child, I didn't understand. They told me that I must go to this. You know, we lived in a small town in Alabama. As I said, my father was a merchant. He run one of those old-fashioned general stores. You could buy anything you needed there, from a box of matches to a plow, cultivator, you know. Anything you needed is the kind of place he had. But anyway, they used to tell me at home that you must go to this one that we go to. I was taught as a child that everybody went to any of the others wasn't going to make it. They just wasn't going to make it. You know, I didn't believe that. I didn't believe that when I was 8 or 9 years old or 10 years old. But that's what I was taught as a child. I just didn't think that I would ever make it because they said I wouldn't. But I did. And it's been a great experience for me to be a member of the human race these last almost 39 years. It will be in December. One of the things that bothered me about this teaching that I had, I thought that because I didn't like to go to the church that they demanded me to go, that I wasn't going to make it either. You know, I just wasn't going to make it. I thought things wasn't going to ever work out. So I went to another one. And one of the things that I have a friend that comes to Pickwick retreat that we have over in Mississippi 3 or 4 times a year. And he tells a story, and he says it's true. And I want to share that with you because he says that he was raised the same way and he felt exactly the same way I did. He went to this particular church where his family demanded that he go. And as a result of that, they demanded that him become a member. And they demanded that him get the Holy Ghost. You remember old Del Mar. So he decided he'd just join that church. So country churches, they baptize you in the creek. I don't know if any of you ever knew anything about that or not, but I did. They baptized you in the creek. So they was getting ready to baptize old Delmar and all these other folks on Sunday afternoon after church in this church that he didn't want to go to because he didn't think he'd like it. He felt he had been taught this thing that I haven't shared in so long, and please allow me to do this. I feel so good about it tonight. Christmas is not too far away, and you have no idea, unless you have kids, how much I love mine, and I know you love yours. But anyway, I was late getting to the school where she was to do this little performance. And when I went into the room, there was somebody on the stage doing something, and I walked around, there wasn't a seat, and I walked away around the wall and leaned against the wall. And just shortly after that, I'd gotten there just at the right time, shortly after that, Karen Sue walked out on the stage to do the song. And God, she was beautiful. I don't know how much, she might have been 8, 9 at the very most. And they played the introduction for her song. And she's looking all around the room. I had promised her I'd be there. And she was looking all the way around the room, and they played the introduction of the song, and she didn't begin to sing. So the pianist stopped, and she started again playing the entrance of the song. And during this period of time, I walked down this aisle so I could be close to where she was. Going to turn it loose here in a minute. Told you I cried a lot. Karen spotted me over leaning against the wall, and she began to sing, and she sung her heart out. And she never took her eyes off of her daddy dear. That's some of the things that come to us as a result of sobriety. I would rather be an alcoholic and have sobriety and have the experience that I've had as a result of being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and have the friends that I have on this earth, such as you and such as the ones that Mickey and I have met from coast to coast over the last 38 years. I would rather do that. I'd rather have that as to be a millionaire. And I mean that with every ounce of strength in my body. It's been a pleasure, and I love you very much. Thank you.